And after that, when I moved out, because I was only there for a year, I think I literally had to ask again for support with the deposit. And I feel so much embarrassment, so much shame around that. Until finally, when I moved out for my second place, I didn't ask anyone for money. I had the money to be able to put down my deposit, to be able to pay for whatever is it that I need for this new place. Like, it was just a beautiful moment.
For me, what I've learned through therapy and just growth in general is that
question of when we go there,
you are,
is what we're going to find better than what you're leaving.
I think men have a much harder time, just culturally and gender-wise. I think men have, I've never been, you know, maybe.
Hello there. I'm Yonka Kamara. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries, where we share stories of critical moments in our personal and professional lives.
I'm telling you this story, but I never, ever, ever, ever have to relive that story again.
I mean, you're supposed to be able to, you know, work through it, play through it. So I think that has been an issue.
There's no denying that money plays a significant role in our everyday lives. Yet many of us are uncomfortable to talk about it. This week, our guest, Rosa Colleen, talks openly and vulnerably about her journey with money. Rosa is a social worker with a passion for personal finance. For Rosa, the value of money took on a whole new meaning when she began to take charge of her finance. In our conversation, she reflects on her earliest money-related memories and experiences. Rosa explains the shame and embarrassment she felt when she had to ask or borrow money from friends, and how freeing it has been to no longer be the one asking, but instead providing financial support to others. Through her personal finance reading club, Rosa is helping other women build strong relationships with money without feeling shame about their past money decisions. Rosa's story encourages us to invest in ourselves. Hi, Rosa. Welcome to Kume Turning Point Diaries. I'm so excited to have you. How are you?
All is well. Thank you so much, Yoka. I really, really appreciate being here.
Yes. And I appreciate you making time to be on the show. I'm so excited to have you and to cover so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell our audience where you are joining us from.
So I'm currently in the Bay Area. I am in my car taking this Zoom call.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so what do you do in the Bay Area?
Yeah, so I am a bilingual clinician right now, and I serve young people as their therapist. And again, outside of work, I host a book club with women of color to talk about money and to talk about their relationship with money. And it has been such a beautiful space and such a learning space for all of them to just be able to hold each other accountable and have these conversations that are absolutely needed.
I'm so grateful that you created this. I'm part of it. So Rosa and I attended college, Occidental College. I think at this point I've had so many Oxy people. It's becoming like a little Oxy club. But Rosa and I attended Oxy at the same time. So I actually knew her, and she was roommates with one of my close girlfriends, Irene, freshman year. So that's how I got to know Rosa. And then, you know, over the years, we've just kind of reconnected. And, you know, I'm so proud of the work she's doing with women and money, and I'm hoping to learn more about that and her journey with that. So Rosa, what really inspired you to start this group?
Yes. So I remember in 2018, I think I had set a goal for myself. I wanted to be able to pay off my car, and I think I wanted to get rid of one Oxy loan. And so I had a post-it by my bed that said, by the end of December, I'm going to pay this off, right? And I kept seeing it every single morning, every time I went to sleep. And in 2018, in December, there was a Women and Money conference. And so I attended the conference, absolutely loved it. I mean, for those that are in the Bay Area, please, please check out this Women and Money conference that's hosted in Oakland every single year. And so I met my mentor there. And so I went up to her. She was part of a panel. And I said, I'm going to be bold and I'm going to go up to this person and ask her to be my mentor. And so she said, I will be honored. And I'm like, thank you. And so every single month for a whole year, we talked about finances. She really helped me structure my finances and just look at everything. And I became so inspired that I literally took a personal finance class at a local community college, continued to learn there. And with my peers at work, I'm like, let me help you. Let's talk about money. Let's go over your budget, all these things, right? And so I just continue to share this knowledge. And I'm like, I want to be able to create a book club and be able to talk about money and read Grow Your Money by Bola. It's one of the very first books that we picked up. And so, and I listened to her podcast. I became super inspired by her. I listened to so many different money podcasts as well. And so I created the book club. I think I've always wanted to create a book club. I just had no idea, you know, what subject or what we were going to talk about. And we started, I believe, last year during the pandemic. And I started off with 18 women. And at the end, I surveyed them. And oh my goodness. They literally did so many changes in their personal, like, finance life. And I was incredibly just, like, grateful that I was able to provide this space for them. And they're like, we're coming back next year, right? Like, this is happening next year. And I'm like, oh, my God, I had all these things. And I'm like, you know what? Yes, let's do it next year. And now it's like 45 girls, right? So it's just the need is there. It really is.
The need, yeah. It's definitely there. And I actually saw, it was a Facebook post, I think you posted about it. And I was like, oh, I want to join for sure, you know, because I've also been on my personal finance journey and just financial literacy, which I think is so, so important. You know, there's so many things structurally in this country that makes it difficult for people, you know, especially people of color. But then there are things that we can do on our own. I think of it as Band-Aid, but that we can, where we do have some power, right? On a daily basis. But I want to go back to your childhood and maybe, like, what was your relationship growing up with money? What did you observe in your household with money? Because I think what we see growing up affects the relationship we have with money later on in life, right? So can you tell us about your childhood?
So I grew up in a single parent household, working class. And one of the things that I noticed about my mother is she had an envelope system. And I noticed she always put money in different envelopes, whether it was for rent or groceries or paying, you know, PG&E. So she was always on top of her bills. And I still knew we were struggling, right? Like, there was days where it was rice and beans, you know what I mean? It was days where we didn't necessarily have enough money. And so she had to feed herself and three other kids, right, in the same house. So it was really difficult growing up with not enough money. And of course, like, mommy never spoke to me about money. She never told me about, like, when you need to make sure that you're saving for the future or if you have any goals in mind, right? And that's why it took me so long to finally get it and finally realize, yeah, it's super important to save and to have all these goals and just really realize, like, how can we make that goal possible and what do we need to do to get rid of debt or to start saving for specific goals.
You mentioned the rice and beans. You know, I've listened to Dave Ramsey for some time and he always talks about it's like sometimes you just need to get on that rice and beans diet, right? So what did rice and beans mean to you? You know, when you ate that, did that mean like, oh, mommy is really struggling? Like, was there a difference in like the meals you had on certain days? Did those meals indicate where your mom was in terms of like how well she was doing with money?
I can't remember, you know, for how long or how many days, right? But I remember rice and beans. That was a struggle moment for us as a family. And other times where I felt like, yeah, we had decent food is when she made chilaquiles or when she made menudo or mole. We had like really just amazing, delicious food. For all of us, was able to feed all of us. And so you can tell the differences between the kind of food that we end up eating. And then when we do struggle, it's like we tend to think of, yeah, rice and beans. That's when we're really struggling. We don't have enough money to even buy meat kind of thing.
Did that kind of meal eating change over time? Or was it like always that way all throughout your childhood?
I think, you know, of course, there was those moments with the rice and beans, and there was those moments where we were able to get like delicious meals. And so I think my mom, she was a factory worker, and she didn't really earn much. I mean, we're talking about like 18,000 maybe a year or so, sometimes even less than that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she was feeding, you know, not only herself, right, but three other kids, it was probably a lot for her, especially being a single parent. And I wasn't working, obviously, and my brothers were still young, and I think the oldest was probably working and definitely was helping around the house. And so it definitely changed throughout the years. Of course, like once I got to college, I think I left my family home at like 17, and everything changed because I wasn't home that often, and I was, you know, rooming at school the whole time. And of course, like, for those even considering Oxy, they have the best food.
Oxy does have really good food, though.
So definitely take advantage. If you get a set to Oxy, please go. Definitely things changed over the years. And I think, you know, once I left, right, she had more room for her to be able to feed her other two kids, especially because she didn't have to worry about feeding me since I was already going to college.
What was your first memory of that experience? Like maybe when you know, the first semester, like what was your relationship with food and money, you know, because you still had a meal plan, right? Which was still attached to money. How did you choose your meal plan? What was your relationship with the food, you know, now that you just had like just infinite amount of food and you can eat every day? You can eat anything, and great Mexican food as well on campus.
Yes. So when I got accepted to Oxy, I was incredibly blessed with the financial aid package that they provided me. And I was coming in with an outside scholarship as well, even though I still left, right, with some debt, but it wasn't like huge. And so I felt comfortable with the money that they gave me and the meal plan that I chose. And honestly, there were days where I didn't have enough money in my cart. And I literally had to ask like my friends, like, hey, can you pay for this? Mm. And, you know, that feeling was like, oh my God, I can't believe I don't have money in my card and I have to ask somebody else to buy me for food. Right. It was, you know, it was some devastating And so being able to see all of the different types of food that I had access to was absolutely amazing. I mean, again, Oxy literally, like, they have really, really great food, so many different stations. And I was able to eat really, really good while I was at Oxy. And in terms of money, I think I did work at Oxy. I think two different jobs and then one outside. And again, I had no idea what to do with my money. I felt like I was always spending it and I wasn't really saving it at all. I think once I got older, because I literally started my journey in 2018 and I was around 27, that's when I literally just started that journey and noticed like the importance of saving, and that's when I started doing that. However, at such a young age, even as a college student, that wasn't taught. We weren't talking about money in any of our classes or even with my peers, right? And I remember some folks like wanted to do something for spring break, and I couldn't because I didn't have money to go to this trip. I literally had to go back home and just chill with mommy and my siblings and just wait until that week was over and then come back to Oxy because I did not have enough money to go to trips like that. So it was challenging, most definitely. And as I got older, it's like, yeah, this needs to change. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to go to different places, right? So what is it going to take for me to make that happen?
Yeah. I can imagine. So what happened in 2018? Because you've now mentioned 2018 as being the year, right, that you started to really think like, I need to have a different relationship with my money. What was the turning point? Was there a particular thing that happened that made you think like, no, something needs to change?
So I think I had a loan that I needed to pay for my car, and I think the Oxy loan as well. And I don't know what happened that year that I was like, I need to pay these off. I need to make sure that I pay this off. Oh, I think I got a raise at work, and I was like, I have all this extra cash, so I need to do something with this extra cash. And I think that allowed me to really pay off my debt really fast. And that conference that I mentioned, and ever since then, I literally attend that conference every single year because the speakers are phenomenal. The women, they are amazing. You get to network with other people and just really feel comfortable talking about money. And sometimes we really need that space to be able to just process our money script or talk about money and the impact that it has had in our lives.
I just want to go a little bit deeper, right? Because we sometimes, all of us come across certain things and, you know, where it's like, oh, it kind of resonates with us, but then we don't do anything about it, right? Like you came across this conference, right? But something in you said, I'm going to actually follow through and attend this conference. If you can think back to that moment, what made you think like this conference is worth me putting my money into?
Yes. So I think that year I probably read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And one of the biggest takeaways that I got from that book was you have to invest in yourself. And so that year I was like, okay, this is how much it costs. That's totally fine. I got it because I'm investing in myself. And I know that this is going to help me in the future. And ever since then, I just kept paying for more conferences. I think last year I paid for a financial fitness program so that I can start my own coaching business. And so that was a lot of money. And I had to remind myself, this is going to be worth it in the future. The need is absolutely there. And you already have the skill set to be able to coach women and for them to feel comfortable with you. And I believe money is energy. Energy is money. And so in abundance, right? I'm always preaching abundance, and abundance is everyone's birthright. And so I want to make sure that through this business that I eventually will start, like I want to be able to coach women of color, especially around personal finance, and to talk about money script and to talk about their relationship with money, even at such a young age, like the question that you asked me earlier, right? Like, what was your experience growing up with money? Because sometimes that experience was probably incredibly triggering. And you haven't necessarily addressed that. And so you're still having like this scarcity mindset and you're still feeling like there's not enough. I need to save all this money and you're not investing it, right? Or you're not donating it to other organizations.
Yeah. No, I like that point about one of investing in yourself, right? Because sometimes we deprive ourselves and it's all about framing things, right? It's like, yes, I'm spending it, but in the long term, it's knowledge I'm going to gain. In the process of doing better with your finances, what has been some of the things that you've thought about or reflected on your childhood?
Yes, I remember working, I think, at a donut shop. That was my very, very first job. I think I was like 14 and a half or something. And so I was able to get, you know, checks every 2 weeks, I think, or every week. I can't remember. However, like I just spent that money. I never saved it. And looking back, I don't even know if I gave money to my mom, you know? So it was just like, oh my God, like what is going on? No one told me at a young age, you need to save or you need to be able to also share your money with other people, right? Like those lessons weren't taught at all. And of course, growing up in school, middle school, high school, like I didn't take any personal finance classes. That wasn't taught at all. And of course, seeing my mother struggle, I was like, I don't necessarily want to feel like I'm struggling that way. I want to feel like I'm all like I can always have food on the table for me and to be able to also give back and to also save. And with my mother, I'm taking her in this journey as well, because now we're working on her budget and her spending habits. And, you know, the last time we checked in, she was so shocked at how much she was spending on this one category. So she started changing her ways and started changing the way she spent money. And of course, like all your family members won't be open to it. And so you can just plant seeds with your family members and start the conversation with them. And hopefully some of them will agree, okay, let's do this. Let's make it happen. So I was able to do that with mom. I was able to do that with my third oldest brother, and I'm so proud of him because he got rid of a lot of his debt. And so he's working on paying off that car now. And, you know, he has kids. So I'm like, hey, let's talk about 529 accounts for your little ones, right? I was able to open one for my niece and start saving for her little college fund. And she's a cutie. She's a cutie pie. She's like, can I come to California? Can I stay with you when I go to college? I was like, of course you come over and stay with me. And I'll be there, you know, when you start dorming and bringing you stuff and things like that. So she's excited, because once you start talking about 529 accounts or college account with young kids, they're like, oh my God, I'm expected to go to college now. Someone is saving money for me to go to college. So it's expected, yeah. Right? Growing up, that wasn't an expectation at all for me. Mommy was so caught up with paying bills and making sure that she was feeding us and clothing us. She wasn't thinking about higher education and college and things like that. I'm literally the only one in my family out of four that graduated from college and got her master's. There's so many lessons learned growing up in LA. And of course, just like the changes that come with that.
Yeah. No, I think that's like the power, right? There's moments where I'm just like, money shouldn't have this impact on us, but there's emotions that are tied to it. There's
absolutely
aspirations that are tied to it, right? Like, I love what you said about, now setting up a college fund for your niece. It sets up this like expectation, a good one, right? That she will go to college, right? Without you saying you're going to go to college, but it's now like, oh, somebody's, wants me to go to college, right? And there's that support there when it's time for me to go to college. And I think that's so important, right? Like, we can support people in so many ways, and actions like just setting up a fund can be that support for them, right? When they're, when they reach that stage. Has there been anything in recent years that you've seen where you're like, okay, I'm so glad that I invested in myself in this way?
That is such a great question. So I remember when I first moved to the Bay Area, I was staying with a couple college friends, and then I was able to find a place in Oakland. My roommate actually at the time was able to find that place. And I think I had to ask my family or my peers to help me with the deposit. So that in itself was such a struggle. And after that, when I moved out, because I was only there for a year, I think I literally had to ask again for support with the deposit. And I felt so much embarrassment, so much shame around that. Until finally, when I moved out for my second place, I didn't ask anyone for money. I had the money to be able to put down my deposit, to be able to pay for whatever is it that I need for this new place. Like, it was just a beautiful moment that I'm like, oh my God, now I'm in this journey where I don't have to ask people for money, where I can actually pay this off. And I was laid off at my last job. And thankfully, I was able to save like a good chunk of money. I think maybe at the time, six or seven months of like my emergency savings. And that obviously helped a lot because I was unemployed, I think for about a month or so. And I think I had a peer that was able to support me with like a contract gig, and I was able to get money that way too. And again, like living in the Bay Area as it is, the rent is really expensive. And so I needed to make sure that I had money saved up just in case if I didn't get a job in the next 3 to 6 months, because we were already in the pandemic. And people know it's been so difficult to find jobs during the pandemic. And so I was really blessed to be able to have this emergency fund and to be done with paying off certain debt. It was just a huge moment for me to feel like, okay, I'm in a happy place. And recently I had like a crisis going on with the family. Yeah. And I literally had to tap into my emergency fund and pay for a flight for my brother to come over to LA and a couple other expenses. And I'm so blessed that I was able to do that. I was able to fly my brother out for this emergency that we had, last week. And I probably, I was maybe a couple years ago, that wasn't going to happen. I would have literally had to ask my peers and my friends, hey, this just happened. Can I please borrow, I don't know, $200, $500, right? And this time I'm like, you know what, brother? I got you. Don't worry about it. I'm going to buy the ticket right now and you'll be here the next day kind of thing, right? Like I was able to do all of that. So it was such a good feeling to do that.
Yeah, no, it is a good feeling when you feel like you got it, you know, you got yourself. And I think it's, you know, I never downplay community support. I think it's wonderful when we have people in our community that we know, like we're truly not alone, like they got us, you know, but it's also a beautiful, more empowering feeling when you know that you can do it for yourself. Right. So not shaming anybody for asking, but also helping people to get to a place where they don't have to ask necessarily. Right. So that's wonderful. Was the crisis, was it tied to anything that was financial? Like what did this crisis made you realize anything else about yourself and, you know, the investment you've done for yourself? Cause you did mention about the ability to like fly out your brother, but was there anything else during the navigation of this crisis?
Oh my goodness. Where to even start with this crisis? So my mother, she went into the emergency room 2 weeks ago for just like pain in her stomach. And they ended up hospitalizing her. And I think they said that she needed surgery for like to remove kidney stones and things like that. And so my brother called me and it was like, hey, we're probably going to need you to come so that you can take care of mom for a couple of days. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. Right. So as I'm driving down to LA, my brother calls me and he was like, I think you might have to come here sooner. And I was like, what's going on? They're like, the doctor just said that mom has cancer and it's spreading all over her body and it's too late to do anything. And she only has a couple of days left. And I'm driving and I'm in shock and I am crying hysterically and I'm screaming and yelling and my legs are shaking and I still had 5 hours to drive. Wow. And so two of my oldest brothers were at the hospital at the time and, you know, my sister-in-law and my uncle. So we were all in a state of shock. We were just like dealing with so many emotions. And I called all my homies and I'm like, y'all, my mom is about to die. She has cancer. And I'm just like crying, screaming and asking God, literally on my vision board, it says I'm traveling the world with my mother. And I said, God, like, I still have time with her. What is going on? And I kept feeling guilty, right? Because I've been away since I was 17 years old. I haven't been back with my mother. And we have such a beautiful relationship. We're really close. So I'm like, she went in for kidney stones, right? For them to remove that. How is this happening? 3 hours later, my brother calls me back. And he was like, they got the wrong patient.
Oh my goodness.
We were in a state of shock for 3 hours. This whole time, my mother was in surgery. She had no idea her kids were outside hysterical. And like, I had two of my brothers trying to kill themselves. I was holding way too much on me as I'm driving. It's like, it was a lot. It was a lot. I was emotionally drained. I was physically drained by the time I got to the house. But it was a blessing. It was a miracle. And I say, thank you, God, because my mother is going to live again. And the surgery is going to be successful. And we're going to have this woman back with us. But it was just, it was frightening. And it was a moment for us to really reflect as a family, like we could have lost this woman. And so now we have to talk about death. Even though it's incredibly difficult to even open up that conversation, my brother was already thinking, oh my God, I gotta take out a loan. I gotta do all these, you know, things with money to be able to pay. He was already thinking about the funeral. He was already thinking about all of that. And finally, when we all came together as a family, I was like, I got the money. I have the money for her funeral. I'm set. I'm ready. You know, I hate to say that I'm ready for her death. But financially, I am. And so they didn't know this because I know my brothers. If I open up this conversation, they're going to shut me down really fast. And so I didn't want to engage or entertain that at all. So now they know that, God forbid, if mommy does pass away, if it's a real thing, then yes, financially, I have a cover for my mother. And this whole experience just started bringing up so many childhood memories. It was a really difficult experience and also a beautiful experience, because we definitely got to talk about our childhood and our relationship with each other and things that we want to change moving forward. And it also made me realize the reason why I went to therapy in the first place. I started therapy as an adult for the very first time last year. And to process, you know, my childhood trauma, to process my relationship with men, to process my chronic pain. And so I realized this was the reason why I left LA for the first place, because I have brothers, but never felt protected by them, never felt loved by them. Till this day, I still yearn for their love. And it's something that I need to let go. And it was a very, very interesting experience, very difficult, still loving experience. And now I know why I left in the first place and why I don't necessarily feel like I want to come back. I love my mother to death. She's the love of my life. You know, I tell her, you're in Spanish, tú eres la luz de mis ojos. You're the light of my eyes. And I always tell her she's the love of my life. And we're so affectionate with each other. And I'm so blessed that she's still with us. But it was a lot.
Wow. It's I can only imagine the roller coaster that you were on that day of emotions. And, you know, I'm so grateful that your mom is here with you, still with you guys. You know, it's a blessing. But it sometimes takes moments like this where it's like, literally, it's a crisis, right? Because then just like everything comes at you all at once, right? And you're processing so many things. And it's wonderful also that you're in therapy. As I've shared on here, you know, it's one of the biggest gifts that I've given myself. It's one of making those discoveries, like you making a discovery that like the reason why I left, you know, because if you don't understand the reason, you may never be able to go back, right? And be able to, you know, like your niece even mentioning like, oh, when I come to California, I want to stay with you, right? But you might be in a different place and you might not be receptive to moving back to LA and being close to her, because you still haven't let go of that wound. You haven't healed that wound that made you not leave in the first place.
Absolutely. Just because, you know, with therapy, you get to learn to set boundaries with family members. I think it's so important to be able to set boundaries with family. And it's not for them, it's for you. It's for your own healing, right? And so I obviously went through a lot with my brothers growing up, and I'm still processing it to today. And so we tend to store a lot of our trauma in our bodies as women. It tends to be in our hips. And so when it comes to money, it tends to be in our lower back. And so I'm dealing with all of that right now. And so in addition to going to therapy, because it's such a beautiful space, it's like being able to take care of your body. You are a beautiful spirit. Your body is a vessel. You have to take care of your body. You only have one, right? So take your body for a walk. Hydrate your body. Drink a lot of water throughout the day, right? Meditate with your body. Like, really love it unconditionally. And it is a journey. I'm not saying this is easy, but it is a journey that you have to be willing to commit. So seeing my mother in the hospital with these kidney stones, that is the way her anger was manifesting. It's like literally she was storing so much, because my mom has been through a lot. She was a survivor of domestic abuse. And so, and then dealing with some of her kids being machistas. And so she has dealt with a lot. And so she's storing a lot of anger in her body. And I strongly do believe that those kidney stones were because of that. And so we need to be able to process our feelings. We need to be able to communicate, express our feelings, learn to release, learn to let go, and really, really be intentional about taking care of our bodies and love our bodies. And it doesn't necessarily have to be difficult.
Yes, yes, yes. I was just talking to a friend recently, and she was talking about integrating a practice of like release, because like you said, so much trauma is also stored in our bodies, right? And so being not only being able to say it, but being able to find ways so that physically leaves our bodies, right?
Right.
And what practices. So that's something I'm looking into. So if you know of any, please share. And also for our listeners, if you guys know of any practices that you do to help release some of those trauma out of your system, let us know. So you've mentioned therapy. I've shared here that therapy has been my practice of self-knowledge. What's your practice of self-knowledge?
Say more about that.
So, by practice of self-knowledge, I think, you know, it's so important for us to do something, right, that connects us to us, to explore ourselves and the stages that we're in, right? Because we're constantly evolving. We're constantly changing, right? Even if we feel like we're not changing, things around us are changing, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to notice those changes, be able to adapt and truly understand our infinite power and capacity to transform, to change, to be anything and everything. I don't assume, but like your managing your money could be a practice of self-knowledge. Anything that really involves introspection.
Yeah, no, therapy has been incredibly healing, most definitely. And I was able to, I got blessed to select like my very first therapist that I had a consultation with. She was meant to be my therapist. She really was. And so I've been working with her since last year in May. So I'm about to have my therapy anniversary, I think, next week.
Yay!
And so and what I love about her is that she's open to alternative ways of healing too, right? And so not only do I go to therapy, but I also practice like with crystals, and I also do readings, right? And I've been able to find healers in other spaces, and I get to bring that to my therapy, and she's so open to me being able to share the way I've been connecting with my ancestors, sharing the way I've been working with crystals, sharing my readings with her and what they've said about me and family and even money and career, right? So I've been able to bring all of that into this therapy space, and she's so open to it, and I feel so validated and affirmed. And so not only with therapy, there's so many other ways to heal. You have to ask yourself, like, how do I want to heal? Some people heal through music, through art, through therapy, through a combination of all of that. And so being able to sit and reflect and ask yourself, okay, how do I want to heal? What makes sense for me? And be able to really build that relationship with your body and listen to your body, because it is alive, and you feel those feelings are so, so incredibly real. And I know that I love dark chocolate. I love dark chocolate. And my body, I can tell that she loves dark chocolate, because as soon as I go to the cabinet and I start grabbing that dark chocolate, she starts moving and shaking, and she's so happy that she's about to eat dark chocolate. So I'm telling you, listen to your body, you know, like make sure that you're feeding foods to her that she loves, and you can literally tell when she likes the food that you feed your body and if she doesn't, right? So just continue to build that relationship with your body. I think it's so important.
Yeah. No, it's like feeding your mind and body constantly. Absolutely. Is key. It's so, so key. In pursuing your financial literacy, financial success, have you thought about what you're really trying to get at?
Yeah, I think when it comes to success, you know, society defines success with homeownership and fancy clothes and more than one car, right? Like society, it's so extravagant, the way that they portray wealth. And so it's so important for you to ask yourself, well, how do I want to define my own success, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a home. It can be a mobile home. You can decide to travel the world with your mobile home and feel happy and joyful. It could be a condo. It can be a tiny house, or it can be like, you know, you being able to purchase rental properties if you want, or maybe being able to contribute so much money to nonprofits that you care about, being able to share your money with others, flying people out, traveling all over the world, right? Like, you have to ask yourself, like, how do I want to define success? What would that look like? And how can I get there? And it's so important to really process, right, your relationship with money, growing up with money. What was that like? Because I think a lot of us come with the scarcity mindset. There's not enough money in the world. I don't have enough money. I'm always frustrated. I'm always angry about it. I'm always, you know, there was a point in my life when I used to always transfer savings to checkings. And now I don't do that.
Girl, I know.
Yeah, we all know that struggle.
And how that, when that stopped, yo, it's feeling. It's a good feeling when you stop doing
it. It is, because the struggle was real. Okay. The struggle was real. So it's being able to practice this abundance mindset. There is enough, and connecting yourself with the universe, right? Like, our thoughts and actions are so incredibly powerful. And especially if you add feeling to that, it's even more powerful, right? There's so much money to go around. There really, really is. And so we have to get to a point where I want to practice my abundance mindset. And it can be as simple as gratitude. Gratitude attracts abundance. So every night, say three things you're grateful for. Every morning, say three things you're grateful for. As it is, that's already attracting abundance. For those that want to continue that journey, please check out the 21 Day Abundance by Deepak Chopra. It's a meditation for 21 days, and that literally has changed my life too. It has allowed me to feel really good about my money. And my mantra has always been, money comes to me in unexpected ways. And it's literally, it has, and it's been a blessing. And so that's a really, really great way for you to really practice that abundance mindset, because I think that's so essential. And again, money is emotions. Emotions is money. There's just such a huge correlation between those two things. And so being able to feel good about your money and feel joyful about your money, the universe, if you're paying attention to your money and budgeting and like creating these specific goals, the universe will see that and it will bring you some more money. And it has happened to me. It has happened to my peers. It's a beautiful thing. And you have to ask yourself, am I willing to commit to this personal money journey? Am I willing to do this for myself? And trust me, once you say yes, things are going to start coming to you, and it's going to be a really beautiful experience. Surround yourself with people that are ready to make those changes, that are ready to have those conversations. And I'm telling you, your life is going to be different. There's going to be some really beautiful changes that come to your life.
What is your relationship with money now? If you had to describe it.
It's a beautiful relationship right now, and it's continuing to evolve.
What makes it beautiful?
It's the fact that I have different accounts. Each account has a purpose. The account that I love the most is my travel account. And so I put money into that account at every time I get paid, right? And so I love that. If I decide to travel somewhere, I'll just look at that account and be like, boom, I got the money. I'm going to go over there. And this time I get to take out money from that account. And that's like my spending money when I get to that place. Like, it feels good to be able to have like this account. And also it feels good to be able to give back. Like, I'm donating to the Dolores Huerta Foundation and the Equal Justice Initiative every single month. And I get to do that. I get to spend money on other people. I get to create this college account for my little niece. I get to fly out my brother for a crisis situation that I probably wouldn't have been able to do years ago. it's been a beautiful journey in that way, because I get to give, I get to travel, I get to do things that I probably wouldn't be able to do, you know, 2 years ago. I would have been struggling and maybe even asked people for money. And so it's a sense of relief. It's a sense of calmness. And it's also a sense of joy to be able to feel good about my relationship with money.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And that's, you know, that's exactly how I feel as well. A sense of calm, a sense of giving, you know, when you can give, it's so nice. You don't have to be a millionaire to give. And many of us up in households that give. It's just reframing what giving means, you know, because I think there's this perception that, you know, the people who give are the people who are rich, you know what I mean? And it's like, no, if you, you know, if your family, especially a lot of immigrant families, sending money back home, that's giving, you know, and they're not getting any tax write-offs from that. But like for me personally, being able to do for others, you know, I love to cook.
Yes. So
being able to like have people over my home and cook a meal and not ask them to like, oh, you guys have to pitch in,
absolutely,
you know, but like cook anything. Right. And spend money to get the best ingredients, cook, time. Like that makes me feel so good. And that's giving. That's giving because we're gathering, we're sharing. There's beautiful memories being made from that. So those are all unique ways of giving. It's not necessarily just always the cash, right? It's like, how do you use that cash to create an experience, right? For yourself. And I think it was so beautiful when you talked about your mom, about like this, that you wanted to travel the world.
Absolutely.
With her, right? Being able to give her that experience, right?
So, yeah, and to add to that, we did a little getaway, mom and daughter getaway to San Diego. She's never been to San Diego before, right? So I think we drove down to San Diego. So, and I got to pay for the Airbnb and I got to pay for all the expenses there, right? I was like, mommy, I got you. Don't even worry about it. You know what I mean? I got everything covered. And I remember we went to La Jolla, the beach, and she just wanted to sit by the bench and look at the ocean. That was so beautiful. She's never seen just so much beauty in her life. And for her to be like, come, let's just sit here and just look at the ocean. It was just so beautiful that I got to share this moment with her, and I want us to continue to share more of these moments with her and take her to so many different places, right? Because she deserves that and more.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. And I hope and pray that you guys are able to do that and share that. You know, Rosa, I really, really appreciate you just opening up about your journey with money and all the discoveries you've made along the way in investing in yourself. What is your plans? Because you mentioned that you're doing coaching or you're studying to be a coach. What's the vision now? What's your vision?
Yes.
Like what's on your vision board?
Yes. Let's talk about that vision board. In terms of like what's coming up for me, I knew that I wanted a side hustle because I don't necessarily feel like I'm making enough right now. And I wanted to make sure that this side hustle would bring me some extra income so that I can maximize, right, my 401k. And as of now, I'm maximizing my Roth, and I want to be able to invest more money, or I want to be able to fully fund certain accounts, right? And so with the money that I'm currently earning, it's not necessarily enough, and I want to continue to give more. So I knew I needed a side hustle. And I've been coaching my peers and I've been coaching my family members, and it has been received really well. So I said, you know what, let me save enough money and apply for this, you know, financial fitness program so that I can just get an additional like income stream that way. So right now I'm collecting hours, right? So I'm coaching about 8 clients, and it's so interesting because half of them want to talk about their money script, their relationship with their money, right? Their childhood, you know, traumas around money. And then my other half wants to talk about, okay, I need to get rid of this debt. Let's budget. I'm thinking of buying a car. So it's just so interesting, right? And I feel like, yes, I can do both. However, I feel like I'm leaning more towards the money script, the relationship with your money, because I'm a trained social worker. I am a trained clinician. So as it is, I'm used to these spaces, and they've been so profound. They've been so powerful. And I absolutely love that. So I'm thinking, like, once hopefully by the end of this year, I'll be done with the program. And hopefully by 2022, I can probably put out this business or even sooner. But I really love the idea of this being like an abundance coach for folks and for them to build this beautiful relationship with their money, and knowing that money is energy and that they have the power to create the world or the life that they want to live. And so I'm leaning more towards that. And then, of course, getting, you know, some more certifications. Eventually, I would love to volunteer, especially be able to teach these to young people, to high school students, because there's not a lot of programs necessarily, especially at the high school or at the middle school level. And so I would love to be able to teach some workshops around financial literacy and to teach some workshops with women around financial literacy, but more around like the abundance piece and the money relationship and just that conversation. So that's where I'm at right now that I'm thinking in terms of this journey.
Yes, I love that. Can you quickly tell us, what does it mean, money script? I have an idea, but I just want to make sure it's the same.
Yeah.
So if you can define what money script
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's, again, it goes back to your childhood, right? Like, what are some of the things that they said your parents or your siblings said about money? Like, this is the narrative that you created in your head, right? In your mind, like, okay, there's not enough money. I don't have enough. I'm always going to struggle. I need to hoard money because I didn't have enough money growing up as a kid. So I need to constantly just save and not spend it at all. So it's just these messages that you received growing up as a kid and just the narrative that you created as a child, and knowing that you have the power to change that narrative. So like, yes, these were the things that they said and the messages that I received when I was a kid. But you know what? I want to feel abundant. I want to feel that there is enough money and believe that there is enough money to go around, and that I'm a money magnet and money is constantly coming to me, right? And I don't have to work hard for money, and it's easily coming to me. I'm attracting money every single day, right? So you have the power to really change your narrative.
Okay, I love that, because we're all on this show, we're all about narratives, exploring our narratives, transforming our narratives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's where the power lies, right? You can't make any change unless you understand your story, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, otherwise, it's like just throwing a bunch of things on the wall and hoping one of them to stick, right? But if you actually understand who you are, what motivates you, and all of that, you have a better chance of having success with whatever strategy you use.
Yeah, and to add to that, like what you mentioned earlier, I think it's important to have money dates. Have money dates, right? Mm-hmm. With your money, right? Look at your calendar. Write down some things in your calendar. Look at, you know, the money that's coming in is coming out. Like, track your expenses for 3 months, look at your patterns, right? And then really start creating these smart goals. Like, what is it that I want to accomplish by the end of the year or in 6 months? And then just literally backwards plan, right? Like, every time you get a paycheck, you know, some of that money is going to go to some of these goals, right? So being able to do that. And I think money dates are so important. And of course, have that with your partner as well. I think it's so important to have that conversation with partners so that both of y'all are aligned around money and to talk about each other's relationship with money too, right? Because there can be a lot of conflict around that. So I think it's important to not only have money dates for yourself, you know, individually, but also like with your partner as well.
Yeah. Because we know that many relationships end because of money.
They do.
Money, and a lot of women also end up finding themselves in a worse off situation because after a divorce, because they were not involved, they didn't know what was happening with the money, you know? So being able to really be a partner in your family's financial, you know, on finances is so important, because sometimes we give that up, you know, and when you give that up, you give, you give up some power, you know, or it doesn't mean you know, obviously know who's more savvy, right? But you still need to be in the know, right? And be involved. Where can our guests find you? If they're interested in your coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can definitely check out my LinkedIn. It's under Rosa Colleen. You can definitely message me there as well. I haven't created my my business IG yet, but you can definitely reach out to me at Jahitza27 on Instagram as well. And so the Women in Money conference that I mentioned earlier, if you're ever in the Bay Area or decide that you want to fly out to this conference, because let me tell you, it is totally worth it. It's with YWCA Berkeley. And it's, again, the Women in Money conference that happens every single year, either in November or December.
Okay, wonderful. And maybe one day you'll be having your own conference and I'll be in attendance.
Absolutely.
But in the meantime, I'm looking forward to our next book club meeting. And thank you for all of that, organizing that and bringing such amazing speakers and just getting us, this amazing group of women together to meet, to talk openly about money, right? And also talk, more importantly, openly talk about ourselves.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
And who we are and who we want to be. You know, I think that's the beauty of it. It's, you know, it's just beyond the money. It's like what we want to be,
right,
you know,
right,
and creating that support to help one another,
right,
in that journey. So thank you for that.
Right.
I appreciate that a lot.
Right. Yeah, no, I think this was such a great conversation. Thank you.
Same. Thank you so much, Rosa.
Yeah. My pleasure.
When I was especially diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which, you know, isn't
not so much about. Oh,
thank you for listening to this episode of Kumar Turning Point Diaries. If you like our show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to share with your loved ones. Also, in order to get notified of any of our latest episodes, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on our socials at Turning Point Diaries. DRC Jaye is the technical director of this episode. This episode was produced by Kume House and the AMBC. My name is Yonka Kamara. I'm the creator and host of the podcast. Kume, until next time.
Theme music by Exile Dynamics, featuring More Fox.